how everything happened. So this part will be new for some people who weren't here the last times, but we had said originally that Moshe died on the 7th of Adar, right? And for 30 days they were mourning for Moshe, and then on the 7th of Nisan, they finished the Shloshim period, and that's when, in Perek Aleph, Yehoshua, Hashem gives a whole pep talk to Yehoshua, and Yehoshua tells the people they're going to prepare now for 3 days, and after 3 days, they're going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. On the 10th of Nisan, it actually says in the Pesukim, is when they actually cross the Yarden. Okay, so in between we have Perek Bet. Last week we did Perek Bet with the Meraglim. And the question is, when does the Meraglim actually happen? Okay, so you would think, according to the order of the Prakim, that it should be, yeah, Perek Aleph. He gives the command that we're going to go in 3 days. Perek Bet, we have the Meraglim, and then Perek Gimel, they actually cross the Yarden and they go into Eretz Canaan. And in fact, really, the spies, you know, after they leave Rahav, they go into hiding for 3 days, and they come back. So it seems to almost make sense, except that if you think about it a little bit more, it doesn't really make sense, right? Because first of all, how would Yehoshua possibly have known how long it was going to take the Meraglim? How would he know they're going to be ready in 3 days to go in, right? And also, it doesn't really, meaning for them to have left that day, gone into Yericho, found Rahav's house, been there, left, waited 3 days, and then come back, to do that all within 3 days, it's a little bit iffy. And then we're going to see now, but the end of Perek Bet, basically, if you look inside, they come back, the Meraglim come back to Yehoshua at the end of Perek Bet. Here, look at Pasuk Kaf Bet. Vayachu vayavo hahara. This is in Perek Bet. They go into the mountain. Vayishvu sham shloshet yamim. They stay there for 3 days. At shavu harotvim, until the people that were chasing them go back to Yericho. Vayavakshu harotvim b'chol derech v'lo matzahu. They search for them. They don't find them anywhere. Vayashuvu shnei anashim. Vayardu meyahar. The people go back. They come down from the mountain, the two spies. Vayavru, vayavo el Yehoshua ben Nun. They come back to Yehoshua. Vayisapru et kol hamototam. They tell him everything that happened. Vayomer el Yehoshua, kinatan Hashem biadinu. Kol ha'aretz v'gam namugu kol yishvei ha'aretz mipaneinu. They say, okay, yeah, everyone's scared of us. What happens? Now we're up to Perek Gimel and Pasuk Aleph. So they come back with this report, and then they don't do anything yet. It's nighttime. Nothing happens. Vayishkem Yehoshua v'voker. The next morning, Yehoshua gets up early in the morning. Vayasumi ha-shitim. They leave the place that they were in shitim. Vayavo ad ha-yardin. They come to the foot of the yardin. Hu v'chol b'nei Yisrael. Vayalinu sham taram vayavor. And they go there and they sleep overnight again. And they don't actually cross over until the next day. Okay, so basically it's impossible that this could all have taken place in 3 days. They go to Rahav. They're there for however long they're there. They go to hide for 3 days. They come back to Yehoshua. They give him the report at night. They don't do anything yet, most probably because it's already nighttime. They're not about to start taking the whole camp and say, okay, now we're going somewhere. So they sleep over that night. The next morning, they travel to the foot of the Yarden. They don't travel yet. They sleep over another night, and then they cross. Okay, so it can't be that this happened in order. Right? And Rashi, in fact, says, if you look in source number one, Vayishlach Yehoshua. Al karchi, against my will, ani tzarich lomar, I have to say, shebetoch yimei evel Moshe shalcham. It must be that during the 30 days of avelus for Moshe, he already sent them. Sharei lesof gimel yamim, shetamo yimei evel Moshe, avru at hayardin. Because they cross over the Yarden 3 days after the end of the period of mourning. Okay, we're not going to go through the whole thing. It's basically exactly what I told you before. But basically, the idea is that it can't be that it's in chronological order. And I didn't see anywhere where anyone actually explains why. Maybe someone here has an idea. I mean, I just thought thematically, it's a lot nicer to start off the parak with Moshe died, the 30-day mourning period is over, and now Yehoshua gets up and gives the command, okay, prepare, 3 days, we're going in. And then we'll backtrack and we'll say, oh, by the way, he had already sent out in Meraglim 3 days before, you know, a few days before that, rather than to start off with the Meraglim and then go and get, and then Hashem comes and gives them the pep talk. It makes sense to start off the whole Sefer with Yeshua taking over the leadership, the whole idea of transition, to start with that that point where Moshe's mourning period is over, Yeshua is giving the new command that we're going in. Make sense? Okay. And just the Ralbag actually addresses the question here of why is it that once they get to the foot of the Yarden, why don't they just go in? Why do they have to wait over another night? Before you look at it, maybe somebody has an idea.
Sorry, what's the question?
Sorry, why do they wait another night by the Yarden? Why don't they just go cross over right away?
You mean a full extra day, or just the night that you said?
Meaning it took them a while to travel there. I don't know how long it took them to travel, but by the time they got there, like it was getting to be evening time. They stay. They don't go straight in. They stay over another night. And they were one night there, and then
and
they go
they
in.
Are they all coming in, or just the men to fight?
No, they're all going to cross over now.
So that is in the light of day. So that they see the next that happens, they're not going in as thieves in the night, but they...
Good, so you're the Ralbag, excellent, right? right, so the idea is, the idea is, well, the Ralbag gives actually three, we'll see. Okay, so right, so one idea is that the nace should be very visible, it should be in the light, and therefore, if it's in the light, so then people will see it, it will be good for them, because they'll recognize the miracle, it will be good for the other nations, because the nations will be scared more if they see what happened. Okay, and the Ravag, we'll just read it inside in source 2. Vinei lo avru et hayarden b'layla hu achar avor hashlosha yamim shezachar Yoshua. They don't go in that night l'sibot for a few reasons. Ha'alef ki Hashem yitbarach ratza sheyitparsem zeh ha'mofet l'Yisrael. He wanted this miracle to be made public to all of Bnei Israel. Kedei shetia emunatam bo yitbarach so that their belief in Hashem and in Yeshua as a Navi will be more strong. And therefore they wait until the next morning, the morning of the fourth day. And a second reason, so that he can put his fear onto all the kings of the nations. Right? They really need to see what's going on in order to really get the full impact. And one final reason, they need to have that little bit of extra time again to prepare themselves spiritually, mentally for this big nace that's going to be done for them. Okay. Good, so we're up to Pasuk Gimel. Parak Gimel. Okay, Vayihi Mikseh Shloshet Hayamim. Now it's kind of backtracking. And the end of those 3 days that were discussed in Parak Aleph, Vayavru HaShotrim Bekerav HaMachaneh. The officers now go through the camp. Vayitzavu Et Ha'am Lemor. And they command the people, saying, Kirotchem Et Aron Brit Hashem Elokechem. When you see the Aaron going before you, and the Kohanim and the Levim carrying it, you should get up from your place and walk after it. But just leave a 2,000 amma distance between it. Don't come close to it. So you'll know the way to go. You've never gone this way before. Okay, so firstly, I'm just going to talk about just for a minute. So why do they have to keep this distance of 2,000 amot? So according to the pshat, really, it seems like, what's the purpose? The purpose is so that they can actually see where the aron is. If they're on top of it, they can't see where it's going. And that's exactly what the Radak says in source 4. Kedesh loti kansu berabuvia. They shouldn't come in with a big mix. Thank you. Confusion. They shall see the Aaron from a distance, and they'll all go directly after it from a distance. Rashi gives another idea in source 3. This is an idea of giving kavod to Hashem. This is Hashem's Aaron. This is really Hashem's presence in their midst. They should give a little bit of a distance between them. But then he goes on to say, Kelpai Mama, why 2,000 amot?
It's a lot. It's quite far.
It is far, right? But actually, but you could say maybe they should have been even farther, right? He gives this, it can't be more than 2,000 amot. Why?
Anyway.
What? That they should be still somewhat close. And he actually says, that they should be able to go and daven by the Aaron on Shabbos because there's an issue of Tchum Shabbos, so they can't walk farther than a certain distance. So therefore, it should be close enough that they can always, it can be accessible. I think this is like an important idea just in general that we see always in our relationship with Hashem, that there's always this idea of we have to keep a certain distance and a certain amount of respect, and he's up there, but at the same time, that it shouldn't be that distant, right? He should always be accessible. Another interesting thing over here, though, is the fact that the Aaron is going before them is actually very unique. If you think about the camp in the Midbar and how they would walk, what did it look like? It was in the middle, right? They would camp around it. There were three tribes here, three tribes here, three here, three here, and the Aaron is right in the middle. And then when they would walk, they didn't actually walk exactly in that formation. What they would do is the two groups of three would go in the front, and two groups of three would go in the back. But the Aaron was never in the front. Like, this is a very, very unique thing. And what's interesting is that there's actually one other case in the Torah where we actually do see them in the Midbar going in this formation. And that is, if you look... Verse number 6. And it was in the second year, in the second month, in the 20th day, the cloud, the Anei HaKavod, went up from the Mishkan. And this is right directly after Matan Torah. But Yomer Moshe Lechova Ben Reuel. Well, not after Mount Torah, but after they were camped by Midbar Sinai. Vayomer Moshe Lechova ben Ruach. Moshe says now to his father-in-law, to Yitro, Nosim anachnu. We are now going to travel. We are about to go into Eretz Yisrael. Ela makom asher amar Hashem, ato itein lechem. We're about to go into the promised land. Lecha itainu, come with us. Ve'itavnu lechem, it'll be good for you. Keshem diber tova Yisrael. Good. So they're all excited. They're going to go in. Right? They've been in the desert now for how long? How many years?
40 years.
No, look again. Right, it sounds like it's going to be 40 years, right? But it says, actually, Vayi v'shana ha-shenit v'chodesh ha-sheni. They've been in for a year and 2 months. Okay? This is before the Chedim Araglim. Okay, they're all excited. They're ready. They're going to go in. Yehoshua, Moshe is going to his father-in-law. We're going. Come with us. We're about to go into the land. They're ready to go in. Vayisume yahar Hashem derech shloshet yamim. They walk away 3 days. V'aron brit Hashem nosei lefnehem. Right, the Aaron is going before them. Okay, and just skip on to Lamed Hey, Vahi bin So Haron, the very famous pasuk, right? And it was when the Aaron went before them. Vayomer Moshe, Kuma Hashem, Vayifutzu Eivecha, Vianusu Misanecha Mipanecha. Moshe says, right, Hashem is going before us, and he's going to scatter all the enemies. We're going to go straight into Eretz Yisrael. Everything's going to be great. Hashem is going to destroy all of our enemies, and we're going to, you know, go straight in. Everything's going to be great. What happens? They start sinning. It doesn't actually start with Chedim Raglim. It starts with Medonim, all the few different stories in Behalotcha, and it basically spirals down to Chedim Raglim. And at that point, Hashem says, you know what? You're actually not ready to go in. Okay? And then they start wandering around for 40 years. Right? And now, finally now, they come back. They've gone through 40 years in the desert. They've had their Midbar training. Right? Where we'll talk about, we've talked about it in the past, we'll talk about it again, what they actually learned in the Midbar. And now they're actually ready to go in. And so... what happens? Again, we go back to that original formation with the Aaron in front. Right? And it's very significant because now it's kind of closing the circle. Now they're really ready to go in.
We said this pasuk on Shabbat, which sounds so lofty and incredible and nisim, but it never actually happened.
But it did, meaning it didn't happen then, but it happens now. And actually, I was going to point out, thank you for reminding me, if you look in our parak, if I could find the pasuk. Right. If you look, just skip to pasuk Yedaleh for a second. It says over there, "Vayi bin soha'a me'ohaleihem lavor tagardin." It's deliberately going back to the same lashon that's used there. Not "Vayi bin soha'a run," "Vayi bin soha'a," but it's using those words again to again put us back into the mindset. We're going to now complete what we started then. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Meaning,
But they had like kibush v'chiluk, like they had to fight the war.
Good.
No?
Right. So basically, there was a change in plan. Meaning, we talked about this before, but the idea was that when Bnei Israel first came out of Mitzrayim, right, they were a nation that had no concept of dependence on Hashem. Right. Their whole entire being was, we have to take care of ourselves. They were slaves for many, many years. They were crying to Hashem. Hashem wasn't helping them, and they basically fended for themselves. And they don't understand this concept of relying on Hashem and having faith. So for them, the tikkun for that was really to really learn how to rely on Hashem, which is what happens in the Midbar. But to the other, right, and they go to the other extreme, right? So they have like, so in the Midbar, that's what happens, is they have all these, you know, miracles and man, and they're living in the hand of Hashem. Now, if they wouldn't have had this whole 40 years in the Midbar, what would have happened is that they would have gone straight into Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem would have totally conquered all the nations without, they wouldn't have had to lift a finger, basically. It would have been totally miraculous. But because they weren't ready to go in, so that's not what happened. And instead, what happens is they have this kind of Midbar training school, where they really learn to rely on Hashem, and then when they go into Eretz Yisrael, so now it's time for them to kind of have a synthesis of the two, mm-hmm. And that's when they basically learn to, yes, understand that they rely on Hashem and everything is really coming from Hashem, but at the same time to put in Hishtalis and to put in their own efforts so that they are also part of it. Okay. Okay, we said most of it outside, but I just want to look at just see where I'm getting some of this stuff from. Just look at the sources. First of all, in Radak, in source 5, Amru Razal, a rabbi say, Tanu Rabbanan, Ketzad Avru Yisrael Tayardin, how did Bnei Yisrael cross the Yardin? So the answer, Bechol Yom Vayom, Haya Aron Noseya Achar Shnei Degalim. It used to be, right, the regular way that they would travel would always be that the Aron would go after two flags, meaning two sides, two groups of three shvatim. Voto hayom, but on that day, nasat tchila, it went first. And Neemar, hinei aron habrit adon kol ha'aretz over lefnichem beyardin. And just look at for a second at the Abarbanel in source 7. The Abarbanel explains, amnam b'masa rishon shenasu mehar sinai yatza aron lefnehem latur lehem minucha. So he said in the first traveling, when they left Har Sinai, the Aaron went before them to find for them a resting place. And all the rest of the Kalim from the Olamoid were traveling in the middle. Why was this? Why was the Aaron in front? Hashem wanted to give them this special thing. He wanted the Aaron to go before them because now they had just left Har Hashem. They just left Har Sinai. He wanted it to be like it was the king was escorting them. Hashem was in the front. He's bringing them from his Matan Torah, and he's going to lead the way. He's going to escort them. And so the same thing is done in the last traveling. So also when they cross the Yarden, he commands that the Aaron goes before them. Like somebody who is escorting his friend outside of the city, and when someone comes in, in order to give honor to it. Okay, so it's kind of book. It's a very nice parallel. Like this is what is going to happen, right? They get stuck in this wandering 40 years, but it continues onwards, and it doesn't. It's almost like that break, you know, like a little commercial, and then we continue on where we left off. Okay. Good. Yeah, so we're actually going to discuss it more, but that I think obviously happened at the time of Aaron's death. But you're right. There's going to be this like sort of transitional period at the very last year of the wandering in the desert, where they slowly start to lose all of their supernatural things that are surrounding them. Okay, so we're now up to Pasuk Hey, and basically what we're going to do now is we're going to read through quickly through the Pesukim of Kriyat HaYardin, and then we'll go back and discuss it and see how it's parallel to Kriyat Yamsuf. So we just go through it just so we have the whole story in front of us, and then we can really discuss the contrasts and similarities. Okay, so okay, Vayomer Yehoshua Elam. Yeshua says to the people, Hitkachu, get ready. Ki machar yaseh Hashem bekirachem nifloot, because tomorrow Hashem is going to do in your midst miracles. Vayomer Yehoshua Elakoanim Lemor, Se'u et Aron Habrit, Ve'avru Lifnei Ha'am. So Yehoshua tells the Kohanim, you should carry the Aron and go before the people. Ve'yisu et Aron Habrit, Ve'achu Lifnei Ha'am. And so they do that. Vayomer Hashem El Yehoshua, today I'm going to make your name great in the eyes of Bnei Israel, so that they will know that just like I was with Moshe, I will be with you. Tell the Kohanim who are carrying the Aaron, when you get to the edge of the Yarden, you should stand there in the Yarden. Yeshua calls all Bnei Israel together to come listen to the words of Hashem. Vayomer Yehoshua, Bezot Teidun, Ki Kelchai Bekirbachem. Through this, you're going to know that Hashem is living amongst you. Boreish Yorish Mipnechem, Etekani, Vetachiti, Vetachivi, Vetaprizi, Vetagirgashi, Vemori, Vayusi. And he's going to destroy from before you all the nations. Hinei Aron Habrit Adon Kol Haaretz, Ober Lifnechem, Vyardain. The Aron, which here is very interesting, called Adon Kol Haaretz, the master of the world, but again, the significance here is that that it's really the essence of Hashem's Hashkacha. It's the representation of it. So it's the Adon Kol Haaretz. This Aaron is going to go before you in the Yarden. Vata, klu lechem shnei asar ish mishiftei Yisrael, ish echad mishevet. You should take 12 representatives from the Shvatim, one man per Shevet. Vaya kenoach kaput raglei hakohanim nosei Aaron Hashem, Adon Kol Haaretz, b'mehir Yarden. Once the Kohanim who are carrying the Aaron step into the Yarden, the water will split. The water that was coming down from above, it's going to stand up in one wall. The water that's coming down is going to just break over there, and it will just be a wall. When the people get up to travel from their tents, and the Kohanim are carrying the arm before them, and they come to the water, they step into the water, and now the Yarden is overflowing, it's the days of the harvest. So the water that's coming down from above stands up in one wall, far away from where in the city of Adam, that's where it stands, that's where it stops. And the water stops there. It splits, and the people cross right across from Yericho. The Kohanim stand in the dry land in the water, in the Yarden. And all of the Israel walk through in dry land. And it was once the whole nation passes through, Vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua leimor, Chu lachem min ha'am shnei masar anashim, ish echad ish echad misheva, you should take 12 people, v'tzavu otam leimor, and command them, su lachem yizeh mitoch ha'yardin, mimatzav raglei ha'kohanim, hachin shnei masar avanim, you should take 12 stones, v'avartem otam imachem, should carry them with you, v'hinachtem otam b'malon asher talinu bo halayla, and you will set them up where you're going to camp. And I already went past the end of Perek. Come on, nobody stop me. Okay, good. So basically, Perek Dalet is going to talk about these stones, and we're not going to go into that this time. And it does, Perek Dalet does continue on with, talks a little bit more about the actual crossing of the Yarden, but I think for now we're going to stick with the, mostly what's in Perek Gimel, and we'll get to Perek Dalet next week. Okay, so when you read about the splitting of the Yarden, right, I mean, it's a very obvious parallel. The first thing you're going to think about is obviously going to be the last time you heard of water being split, which was Kriyat Yam Suf. Right, and there too, right, it's a very similar story. Bnei Israel are faced with a big body of water that they need to cross. They can't cross it, and Hashem miraculously splits the water, and then they can cross. And in Hallel, we actually make a strong link between the two. When do we talk about them in Hallel? Good, right? Hayam Rav Ayanos, Hayam referring to Yam Suf, Yarden Yisov Lachor. But there's also other Pesukim in Tehillim that basically talk about both in the same pasuk, paralleling them, bringing them together. Right? We also, we'll see in Parakeh, but the splitting of both seas is surrounded by certain events that are parallel in both cases. There's the Brit Milah, there's Korban Pesach, and there's also the Brit Ed Harival, which we'll talk about more when we get to Parakeh, but the accompanying events are also very parallel. Also, just thematically, both events really represent the theme of passage. We talk about Kriyat Yamsuf, right? Bnei Israel just came from slavery, right? And they're running away from the Egyptians, and they're running away from slavery, and they get to the Yamsuf, and this is really the breaking point, right? This is where they see their enemy, the downfall of their enemies. They see that Hashem is taking care of them. They cross that yard, they cross the Yamsuf, and that's it. Now they're free men. That's really where we have that transition, right? And the same thing happens now again in the crossing of the Yarden. We have 40 years later, it's people who've been wandering around for 40 years in the desert, and now they cross the Yarden and they come to this completely new existence. Now they are coming to settle a land. They're going from being wanderers to being people who are living in this promised land that they've been waiting for many, many years. So both really represent this passage, this transition. It really marks, they really become different people, right? I mean, there's a very big difference between a nation who was slaves and who now become a nation serving Hashem. And there's a big difference between this nation that's wandering around in the desert and now is actually coming and forming Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael.
Isn't Kriya Hayarden a little bit, unnecessary? Like, the Yom Suk one was necessary. There's no, it sort of seems like on the picture that there was nowhere else to go. Huh? But the Yarden, we look at, if places are approximately where they were, then we have the Jordan, and we have Jericho, and there's, there is land to cross.
Good.
It sort of seems like staged.
So hold that thought for, 2 minutes, and we're going to get to it. Okay.
The other interesting thing is that with the Kriyat Yamsuf, there was no preparation. They didn't. It was almost like Hashem waited for them to take the first step and show their faith, even though they came from a place where they had no faith and they were relying on themselves. Whereas here, where they're used to all the miracles and everything happening for them, Yoshua prepares them for the fact that there's going to be a miracle and there's going to be the Kriyat Hayarden.
Good, okay. We're going to take your thought also in a few minutes. Anyone else? I want to jump the whole figure for me? Okay. First, we're just going to look at a couple of the similarities, and then we'll get to the differences. So these are just very technical, minor details, but if you look at your chart. Okay, so you look at number one. It says, "Vayishkim Yoshua b'boker, vayisumi hashitim, vayivo ad Yarden, hu v'chol ben Yisrael, vayilunu sham tarmi avor." Like we said before, they actually camp at the foot of the Yarden before they cross the Yarden. And what happens by the Yamsuf? You look right over there. Also, it says, "Vayim Hashem Moshe, daber ben Yisrael, vayishuva v'yachanu l'fnei piachirot bein migdol bein hayam." Right? They also camp there. Right? Tachanu al yam. They camp there right by the Yamsuf where they cross it. Okay, so they both camp at the body of water the night before they cross. Now, number two, I'll say it, but you could actually argue with it, really. But so number two, we see over here. So Yoshua, Vimer Yoshua la'am hitkashu ki machar yaseh Hashem bekirbechem nifloot. When Yoshua first tells the people about it, later on he actually does go into detail, like Yura says, and does tell them what's going to happen. But in the beginning, when they first come to the foot of the Yarden, they don't know what's going to happen there. He just says, everyone prepare. They have this 3-day preparation, but they don't know what they're preparing for. They know they're preparing to go into Eretz Yisrael. They don't know there's going to be this miracle. He says, everyone prepare, because tomorrow there's going to be Niflaot. But he doesn't go into detail about what those miracles actually are going to be. And the same thing happens with Moshe. Yomer Moshe la'am, al tirau, yitiyatzvu v'ruud yeshuat Hashem. Just stand there, and you'll wait, and you're going to see the salvation of Hashem. But he doesn't actually explain to them what's going to happen.
But also, reminds you of preparing for Kabbalah, Karsinai.
The 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 days,
similar.
Right. Yeah. So we actually discussed this whole idea of 3 days in general throughout Tanakh, but not in terms of the lashon. Also, it's very similar. Okay. And also in source 3, right, Hashem says to Yoshua, "Hayom azeh achal gadlecha b'nei kol Yisrael. I'm going to make you great before all of Israel. Asher yedun ki kasher yiti Moshe yeimach." They're going to know that, I was with Moshe, I will be with you, right? And also by the Yamsuf, there also Hashem says, "V'ikabda b'paro." I'm going to have this. I'm going to be made honorable through this miracle. Vayedu Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem, and then Mitzrayim is going to know that I'm Hashem. So it's different. It's talking about different people, but again, the idea of somehow the splitting making somebody honorable and causing people to know something. Okay, we're not going to discuss actually what, you know, what we learn from those parallels, but the idea is that in a certain sense, yes, we really totally see that these two events are almost like they're replicas of each other. The same thing happens in both cases. And that's an important idea just in terms of we talked about Pnei Moshe, Pnei Achama, Pnei Yeshua, Pnei Elevana, right? That Moshe is like the sun and Yeshua is like the moon, and Yeshua reflects off of Moshe, and a lot of the events are very similar in his life, and he learns a lot from Moshe, and he repeats a lot what happens in Moshe's life, and we see really a direct continuation between Moshe's leadership and Yeshua's leadership. Mm-hmm. And that's very true here. But if we look closer at the stories, we also notice that there are many differences between the stories, which also are very significant. The first one we're going to discuss is Dvorah's, or the Malbim's. Right, if you think about, like, even though, yes, on the surface level they're the same, when you think about it, the stories are very, very different. Right, in one case we have Bnei Israel being chased after by the Mitzrayim. Right, the Egyptians are coming out after them, they're going to kill them, or bring them back to be slaves. There's this huge body of water in front of them, they have nowhere to go, they're stuck. Right, they're scared, they're stuck, and it's very scary, right? It's very dramatic. And they really need this miracle. What happens in the time of Yeshua? They want to cross into their promised land. Yes, they want to go in. There is water in the way. But there's nothing pressing going on. There's nothing dangerous. There's no one chasing after them. They have all the time in the world. And, as Dvorah says, they could have moved over a few kilometers and crossed over somewhere else, right? If you look at the Malbim, he says, number four of this chart, he says, "Ki lo hutzrach le'asot nes l'tzorach havaratam." There was no need to make a miracle for them to cross over. Ki ha'yardin eino nahar gadol. The Yarden wasn't a big river. Kokach l'shalo yuchlu avor bo b'lo nes, that they couldn't cross over it without a miracle. And he brings a proof of Yaakov Amar, "Ki b'makli avarti et ha'yardin." We know that Yaakov crosses over the Yarden. He says he crossed over with his stick, right? There's no miracle there when he crosses, he just crosses through. And also, right, even in our own story, v'hamaraglim avru b'lo nes, right? We just had in Perek Bet, the maraglim went to Yericho. How did they get there? There was no nes then, so if they could go through, everybody else can go through also. Whereas, just in the pasuk itself, but we know that from the story, by the Yamsuf, v'yisu b'nei Yisrael t'enehem, b'nei Yisrael look up, v'yinem Mitzrayim noseach reihem, the Egyptians are running after them, they're very scared, and they didn't put it in here, but the water's in front of them, it's very scary, right? It's a completely different picture, what's going on in Kriyat Yamsuf and what's going on in Kriyat Yaradim. Good. Okay, now let's talk about just how did the water look in both stories? How did it split? If you draw a picture of Kriyat Yamsuf, what does it look like?
Two walls, right?
So the water splits on both sides. There's a wall here and a wall here, and Bnei Israel need to go through it.
That's how they do it in Universal Studios.
Right, exactly. So that's how it is. Exactly. When I taught about Kriyat Yamsuf in high school, so we watched The Prince of Egypt, and then we went through, and like they had to figure out which things were true, which things weren't true, which things are from the actual like the actual text, which things are from Mepharshim, which things are Midrash.
We did that in Mishnah.
Yeah. I didn't get it from there though. Okay, so just in the pasuk, right? So it says in we're on number five in the chart. Vayamdu amayim hayordim milamala kamu nidechat. So in Yeshua's time though, right? What is it? Yeshua's time, it was one big wall, right? Harchek meod me'adam ha'ir. It was basically 25 kilometers away by the city of Adam. So they couldn't even actually see it. It was far away where the water split. They're crossing over here and the water stops over there. Okay? But on the other side, by the Yamsuf, they have two walls in Kriyat Yamsuf. And that's more than just a technical point, because if you think about, just try to envision what's going on. So in Kriyat Yamsuf, okay, they're running away from Israel. So first of all, it's just a different scene because it's chaotic. But they have to run through two walls. When they're running through, it's pushing, shoving, a mob scene trying to get through to the other side. It's constrictive, right? But when they are crossing the Yarden, the water splits over there. There's all this dry land, 25 kilometers worth of dry land. They walk through as if they're walking anywhere else. There's no, it's just free, it's open.
But the river was full.
It was full. Right, it was full, but once it stopped, right, it stopped over there, so now this is just dry land.
That's why the one wall was necessary, because if it was so full,
it would have been too much, and it would have gone.
Yeah.
I think I did see that somewhere, I went in the impression, actually. Okay, so, good. Okay, the next difference is the people's reaction. Right, so what happens in Kriyat Yamsu? Oh, eventually. The reaction before that, though. When they first come to the scene. They're scared. They don't want to do anything. They're crying, right? They're screaming. And they want to go back to Mitzrayim, basically. Right, and then Moshe says to them, Hashem yilachim lachem v'atem tacharishin. Just be quiet. It's okay. You can go through. But they're basically... They're just crying and screaming. And according to the Midrash, the people really don't want to go in. You look at source number 9, the Gemara in Sota says, Zeh omer inani yorei tchila leyam, v'zeh omer inani yorei tchila leyam. All the Shvatim are sitting there by the foot of the water. Right, the Egyptians are chasing after them. And Moshe's telling them to go in, and they're sitting there and they're fighting. And one's saying, I'm not going in first of all, and nobody wants to go in. Right? And eventually we know that Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumps in, and then the water splits. But until then, they don't want to go in. Right? They're scared, they're crying, and they don't want to go in. What happens in our story? We don't hear anything. There's no complaints. Well, they're just going to go in. The Kohanim go in, right. I guess it's already official what's going to happen. But we don't hear any kind of complaining, any kind of crying. And this is, again, going back to what Leora said, it follows our entire understanding of the story, is that when you think about it, these people are used to miracles, right? And therefore, it's not a big deal. If Moshe says go in, they just go in. Right? It's not something that they're scared of. But we'll talk about that more in a minute.
But it was split already, meaning they were looking at whatever you want to call it, split or parted sea, something like at the dry land.
Right, interesting. I mean... Although he is going through we actually see it a few times where he's telling them what's going to happen, right? And we don't, at that point, there's no one saying, well, I can't do that, I'm crying, I'm going back to the Midbar, right? No, they just, but you're right, there is a certain difference there in terms of that, yeah, they do go in and the water's already split.
In defense of,
no, you're right.
You see it, Mitzrayim, they were looking at the water, they weren't looking at us.
Right, yeah, I hear you saying.
Also, they didn't have faith.
Right, and that's going to be our main point that we're going to discuss in 1 minute. So if you look just to see their calmness, if you look in number 6 on the chart, it says this actually happens in Perek Dalet, because Perek Dalet kind of backtracks and tells us the story again. So we didn't actually see this inside, but Perek Dalet in Pasuk Yud, it says Va'kohanim nosei Aaron umdim b'toch hayardin ad tom kol davar asher tziva Hashem et Yoshua ladaber al ha'am. The Kohanim stand in the water with all the people in the dry land, really. All the people are there waiting for Yeshua to finish talking to them. Basically, what happens is that Yeshua is giving them all these instructions of talking to them inside the middle of this dry land of the Ardeen. And they're just waiting, and they're just there, it's not like they're rushing through. They're standing there, and they're discussing it, and they're talking about what's going to happen with the rocks, and nobody's scared. Right, they're not afraid that the water is going to come down on them. They have faith. There's no complaining. And basically, I mean, what we've been talking about, I mean, what we see from all of these things is really this basic difference. And we'll just say it again, but the idea is, right, the generation of Kriyat Yamsuf was this generation that grew up as slaves in Mitzrayim. They don't have a concept of trust in Hashem. They leave Mitzrayim, they're totally bewildered, everything's confusing, and they come to the Yam Suf, right? And they have the Egyptians chasing after them in this water in front of them, and they're scared, right? Because right now, they think they need to rely on themselves, and there's nowhere for them to go. They're stuck. So they're just sitting there, and they're crying, and they're screaming. And what does Moshe say to them? Moshe says, you're right. There's nothing you can do here, right? He says, Hashem yilachim lachem v'atem tacharishin. Hashem is going to fight for you, and you're going to be quiet. Right, it's not up to you. If it's up to you, then you can cry. Right, it's nothing you can do. But you have to understand that right now it's time for you to be quiet and let Hashem take care of you. But this is very difficult for them. Right? This is not a concept that they can just understand overnight. So they fight and they don't want to go in, but they're forced to go in. Right? In this story, right, everything's done in a way that they have to go in. There's no choice. Right? There's Egyptians chasing after them. There's nowhere for them to go. Right? And there's two walls over there pushing them in. There's nowhere else for them to go. They just have to go in one direction. And so they do it, and they cross over, and they do put in a certain amount of faith, because they actually do go in the end, right? But it's not the ideal, right? And what's interesting is that even though it might appear on the surface that Kriyat Yamsuf happened as a solution to a problem, the truth is that this also was something that could have been avoided. They didn't actually have to go this way, right? If you remember in Parshat Vishalach, so it says, very first pasuk, verse 10, Vahi Vishalach Paro Ta'am, So when Paro sends them out, Hashem doesn't lead them on the way of Derech Eretz Plishtim, because that was the close way. And all of the Parshim explained what does it mean is the close way. But even though that was the close way, even though that was the, you know, why would it be that he doesn't send them that way? Even though that was the most direct way to go Derech Eretz Plishtim, they don't go that way. Instead, Vayisev Elokim et Ha'am Derech Hamidbar Yamsuf. Instead, he purposely pushes them in the direction of the Yamsuf. Right? The idea is that the Yamsuf was a certain message that was meant to happen, right? This was something Hashem needed to teach the people. He needed them to, first of all, as we said before, this was a transitional event. So they needed to see the end of their masters. The Mitzrayim are done. We're moving on to a new era, and Hashem is taking over. But that was important for them to see, and it was also important for them to understand that they could rely on Hashem. Okay, but they do it in a way, even though they do go in, and they do sort of somehow start to get this message, it's not the ideal. Right? They haven't yet reached that point. So it's this scene of confusion and stress and fighting. And it takes them 40 years wandering around, being in Midbar school, right, to get into the level of crossing at the Yarden. Right? After 40 years of living off the hands of Hashem, right? So now when they're told that they should go into the water, they're just gonna cross and go through the water, right? They don't flinch. It's totally acceptable. Right, they could have argued, they could have said, well, why don't we just go, you know, a few kilometers down and we can cross where we don't have to go through the water. But no, there's no problem. They have this such complete trust in Hashem that at this point, like, whatever he tells them, walk on water, okay, fine, we'll do that. You know, whatever you say, like, it's fine. Right, they're totally, totally gotten this message. Now, what's interesting is, if you skip down to, number 9 in the chart. In Perek Dalet, again, we didn't see it inside, but in Perek Dalet, after they're standing there in the Yarden and they're getting all the instructions from Yehoshua, after that's all finished, then it says, Vayimarua am vayavor. Now the people quickly go and cross over the Yarden. Right? And it sort of kind of brings us back to Yetziyah Mitzrayim, right? This idea of hurrying, rushing, right? Something that we're familiar with when the night of Yetziyah Mitzrayim, when they're sitting there with their belts on and their hands and their stick in their hands and they're running out, right? And but the reason why they're running out, this haste is very different in the two situations, right? In Mitzrayim, why are they running out? They're being chased. They're scared. Right here, they're running out because they're excited now.
Towards something.
Yeah, they have a goal. They have a mission, and they're going now to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Right. So it's very different. Good. So. So these two sea splittings really are like bookends to the life in the Midbar, and this crossing of the water is almost like a gauge to see their progress. Right, we can see by their reaction to the Yarden how much they've progressed since the beginning of their time in the Midbar, and they've now come full circle, and this new generation is now able to sort of be mashlim the original Kriyat Yamsuf. And now they could do it in the ideal way. They can cross, but they can cross in a way where they're confident and they understand that Hashem is taking care of them and everything's going to be fine. Okay. It's like a tikkun, right? But it doesn't end there. Because why?
There's no praise afterwards. I mean, that's my thing. I don't know. Yamsuf, there was
good.
A big kalabaloo afterwards, and Miriam took the woman, and It was Shivat Yam Suf and now yeah, okay, I'm glad.
Okay, so it's a right. No, I mean, like, right. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Because on the one hand, like, you could say, yeah. So like, they're already used to this, so it's not as big of. Right, but it shouldn't be, right? They should still be able to recognize the miracle. I remember seeing someone who discussed it, and I don't remember. It wasn't an answer that necessarily hit me because it wasn't something that I remembered. But I want to look into that because it's an important question. I don't know. If someone has an idea here. Okay, but it also doesn't end there because, right, what we talked about previously was that, yes, they've gotten over the challenge of being able to depend on Hashem, but now they have a new challenge, right? What's the whole idea of going into Eretz Yisrael? What was the whole, you said that Sefer Yehoshua is the guidebook to transition, was the guidebook to regular life, right? They need to learn how to live a regular life. They're not going to live a life of Nisim anymore. So the fact that they can go through the Yardin without flinching, fine, that's great, but like that's what they're used to. This is a generation that's grown up on miracles. It's nothing, you know, nothing special. The fact that they can go in without being scared, of course they can. That's what they're used to.
You almost expect that with Kriyat Hayarden, they need someone to first go in for the sea to split. Whereas with Kriyat Yam Suf, it shouldn't have been that way. It should have been more an open miracle,
right,
that they just get there and the sea splits.
Okay, right. So what we expect to see really is that there shouldn't be miracles in Yehoshua. They should have to, right, everything should be about, now they're learning how to put in their own efforts, and they have to learn how to kind of strike a balance, and they have to be able to learn how to live a regular life and put in their own efforts and use logic and just regular standards of living, but at the same time recognize that Hashem is in control, right? That's the whole idea of Yehoshua. So what's going on over here?
And I just want to ask a question.
Yeah.
Didn't all the people, except for Moshe and Yeshua and didn't all the people that wandered in the desert die?
Yeah.
So this is now a new generation. So you've got to show the new generation also a bit of a miracle, because it's hearsay what happened, but they actually never saw it.
Good, yes, I definitely saw that in, I don't remember which parish, but I definitely saw that, yeah, the idea of that, yes, they saw it, but now they need to learn the same message. That's true also, but I think also, because they're a different generation, they also grow up with different expectations, and they have different challenges, which is what the whole point is, meaning that the first generation grew up with the idea of they're in control, and they need to learn how to put their faith in Hashem, whereas this generation grew up with Hashem's in control, and everything is, we only depend on Hashem, and they need to learn also now to put in their own effort. So it's almost the opposite challenge that they have. So there are a few points, though. If you look into the story more in detail, there are, meaning we're not going to find that in Yehoshua there's no miracles at all, because it's a transition, right? It's not going to be, okay, now you got to Eretz Yisrael and that's it. There's no miracles at all. But it's a gradual thing where they're going to learn slowly that they need to also live within a means of nature. That was good. okay, so... okay, so we find a few hints of this in the story. So first of all, we have what Leo spoke about. Okay, so, I mean, you can take this how you want to take it, because it depends on if you want to look at the what's actually written in the text and what's actually... what we know from Torah Shabbat Peh. So in the text itself, right, how does the miracle of Kriyat Yam Suf happen?
How?
Moshe takes his staff, right? And he raises it, and the water splits. So we know other, meaning, we know better than Torah. We've heard other things as well, but within the text of the Torah, it's much more miraculous. Like, meaning, he waves his wand around. That's not really hishtalis, that's just part of, you know, the magic wand, and the water splits by itself. Whereas in Yehoshua, according to the text itself, the people actually needed, the Kohanim had to step into the water, and only then would the water split. So they actually do need to put in that first step of their own hishtadlus.
But what happened was not
flung. Right, exactly. So it's as I said, like, you have to, it depends on how you look at it, meaning we do know from the Gemara and from the Midrashim that did happen with Nachshon. But the text doesn't say anything about that. So if you're just looking from a Pshat point of view, according to the Pshat, there is that basic difference.
Is that just the one person versus a bunny?
Right. So it's more. So we need more people. We need, like, the leaders of the people to go in there and take that first step.
Yeah. Do we know that they went in before the water split?
Yeah, because it actually says Vayhi, like, where's the pasuk? I think I put it in this chart here. I think it's in here. Right, in pasuk Yagimel, and 7 in the chart. Vayhi kinoach kapot raglei ha-kohanim. Then it was at that point when they put, like, it's written very clearly, as opposed to in even though maybe it actually did happen in Kriyat Yamsuf, it's not written there, but here it's written very clearly. It was once they put their feet into the water, then the water would split. Okay, good. Also, if you think about, like, the Aaron here plays a very central role in the story, and the Aaron, if you think about it, this is taken from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who basically says, if you think about the Aaron, right, what is the Aaron made out of?
Wood and
gold, right? It has three different boxes, right? It has the gold, the wood and the gold, right? Right. So it's a very physical object, right? And hidden inside it is the Torah, right? So again, this idea of, like, yes, we're going to go into a very physical life now, and the life is going to make me feel very mundane and physical and just regular life, but inside, hidden inside, is going to be this essence, which is going to be this spiritual essence. Hashem is going to be there, even when you're going there and you're farming the land and you're doing things that don't seem so miraculous. Hashem is there, hidden within. So that's just one idea to hint to it. But even more than that, if you think about the position of the Aaron, right? So we talked about this a little bit before, that the Aaron was leading the way. Okay, so the fact that the Aaron leads the way is significant in terms of the fact that it reminds us of the previous story when they thought they were going to go in. But it also is significant in the fact that what happened before that? What used to lead the way? Who said this before? The Ananei HaKavod, right? We used to have the Ananei HaKavod leading the way, which was obviously a very miraculous thing. The Ananei HaKavod was our protective cloud, you know, around us. And in fact, in Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we see that what did the Ananei HaKavod do? They go to the back. I think I put this in here somewhere. I don't know where I put it, but yeah. And there might be an image like that also. Is there? Yeah. But basically, the Ananei HaKavod, they come behind them so that when the Egyptians are fighting against them, they'll absorb whatever is attacking them and protect Bnei Israel. So we have that miraculous object there, which takes care of them. And in general, the Ananei HaKavod was the thing that would always lead the people. And in fact, that's the reason, the entire reason why does Yoshua have to give them a whole command about how they're going to know, like, when you're going to have the Aaron going before you, and when you see the Aaron, then you know that you should start moving. Why does he have to give them this whole command? Because it was different. It used to be that they would just know because the Ananei HaKavod would get up, and then they would all know, oh, there's the clouds going up, it means we have to go. So now it's a different thing. So we have this transgression. We have this progression. Okay, so we have the Ananei HaKavod first, right? Very miraculous. Okay, now we lose the Ananei HaKavod, and like I think Leori asked before, when do they leave? The Ananei HaKavod leave at the time of Aaron's death. The Be'er of Miriam leaves at the time of Miriam. There used to be this water going around with them, so they always had water with them. That leaves at the time of Miriam's death. Things are all the miraculous things are slowly starting to leave them. So they don't have the Ananei HaKavod anymore. Now they have an Aaron leading them. And who's carrying the Aaron? The Kohanim. So it's a little bit more natural, right? It's people that are leading. I mean, they're holding the Aaron, but they're leading the way. But then there's another step, because what happens afterwards? If you look in source 12, this also is in Perek Dalet. Sorry, I don't even know what time it is. Okay, so what happens? All the people cross over, and the Kohanim, where are they? They're still standing at the other side of the Yarden, right? They're over here. The people have crossed over, they're here, and the Kohanim are over here. So what do they do? Sorry. This is the Yarden. They're over here, right? They stepped in, the water split, and they stayed there while the entire nation crosses. So all the nations over here is in Eretz Yisrael now, and they're still on this side. What happens? Yeah, but then what happens afterwards? How do they get to the other side? So according to if you look at the very Peshat of the Pesukim, basically what happens is that the people, as soon as all people finish crossing, then the water comes back. While the Kohanim are still there.
But it's crossable, so it's not a big... They just
I need to find the right Pesuk so you'll know what I'm talking about. You know, probably if you maybe if you just look in this pasuk and Perek Dalet pasuk Yudchet, probably will say it. Let's just see in Perek Dalet pasuk Yudchet. Once they come out of the Yarden, their feet go to the dry land, and the water comes back. Now, the pshat of Sukkim is basically that they probably walked to the other side, and then the water came back. But the Midrash picks up on this over here and says, what actually happened is that they walked backwards back to the dry land, and the water came back, and now they're stuck on this side, and people are on that side. So how do they get through? So Rashi says, but it's also he's quoting the Midrash and the Tosefta here also, it says, Nitzku kapot raglei hakonim, min ha-mayim el ha-charava she'atzlam. They went back to the dry land that was right next to them. Vayishuvu ha-mayim l'nkumam, the water goes back to its place. Nimsa aron mitzad zeh, v'yisrael mitzad zeh. So they're on the wrong side. What happens? Nasa aron ed nosav ve'avar. The aron flies up and carries the kohanim over the water to the other side.
It's an extra miracle.
So much for getting it right.
That's true. But the point, though, that I was going to say over here is that the Aaron actually stays back. Meaning, first we have the, in the beginning, it starts out that the Amunah, the pillar of the cloud is going in front of them, very miraculous. We drop that, and then we have Aaron going before them, which is less so, but we still have Hashem basically leading the way. Hashem is in control, right? But now the Aaron takes a step back for a minute, stays in the back while the people go in front, right? Kind of indicating that, yes, Hashem is always going to be there with you, but the people are sometimes going to have to take their own initiatives and they're going to have to go forward. Mm-hmm. Now the Variel, in his book on Yehoshua here, she says something very interesting. He says, read in 13, Hadam noseet aron, kiviyachol hu noseet ha-shechina. When people are carrying the aron, it's almost ki'ilu that they're carrying the shechina. They're carrying Hashem's presence. They're bringing Hashem's presence into the world. Nidmelo shehu po'el ve'oseh. And sometimes it might seem to a person that he is the one who is working and doing. And things are impossible without him. He needs to be there. He's the one who's bringing Hashem's presence into the world. It's all about him. Aval alav lomod litzdaneya. But he needs to learn to be a little bit tsanua, to be a little modest, humble. Ki lohu koveyet darkash al hashchina. He's not the one who is koveya the way of the Shechina, vet pulata in its actions. Ela hadvarim menualim in Hashemayim. These things come from Shemayim. Vaadam hu hamachshir biyada lemalach elyon. Person is really the instrument in the hand of Hashem. Akohanim nasu et aron, right? The Kohanim were carrying the aron. Avalohim cholalu et hanis el haron. But they're not the ones who made the miracle. Rather, it was the aron. Hayachas bein yozmat adam. Right, so this balance between the initiative of a person and his actions to the action, the hashgacha of Hashem, is a very complicated relationship. Hashem wants the person to be active in the world. He should take an active part in what happens in the world. And he should contribute with his actions to the way, to the way of Hashem. Umishum kach in haron merachef miatzmo ba'avir. And therefore, in general, before the story happens, the aron does not fly by itself in the air. It does afterwards, but it doesn't before. El ha'adam mitzuva l'seito l'shatef b'mafal mifal. Rather, people have to carry the aron. Aval ha'adam tzarich la'akir ad mekomo l'adat shelamrod ma'asav lo hayak akoveya. But a person has to recognize his place and know that even if he wouldn't have done it, he's not the one that is Kovei. Right? Basically, how does he get this from the whole story? I'm trying to get the connection. So basically, in normal life, right, what happens? The person carries the aron, and he thinks that he is the one who's in control. He's carrying the aron, right? But the idea is that through this midrash, we see that really it's not really him that's carrying the aron. The aron is really carrying him. You can take it, meaning you don't have to take it on a literal level. But the idea is that a person should recognize that even though he thinks he's the one who's in control and he's carrying the aron, really the aron is actually carrying him, and it's Hashem is the one who's using him as an instrument and making things happen. Sorry, I'll just finish up. I don't know what time is it now. It's really late.
It's quarter two.
Okay, so we're just going to finish up really quickly. talked about that in HaKavod. Okay, so just to close off, so basically there's just one more connection between these two stories, and that is the time that it happened. Okay, when does the splitting of the yardin happen, discussed before? What was it? 10th of Nisan. Okay, what happens in the 10th of Nisan in the first Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim? Korban Pesach, right? That's when they were told to take the sheep for the Korban Pesach. Right, the 10th of Nisan is really the beginning of their redemption from Mitzrayim. Right, they don't actually leave yet, but that's when they start to take the sheep that they're going to use for the Korban Pesach. They put the blood on the doorposts. Right, that's when the whole thing gets set into motion. And now we come full circle, and now we've come to the 10th of Nisan 40 years later, and now they're crossing the Yarden, and it's a very like neat close of the story, meaning they started their faith in Hashem with this taking of the lamb. We said that was really an act of faith because they were taking the god of the Egyptians and telling the Egyptians they're going to kill it, right? So that was their first act of faith in Hashem, and that was really the beginning of the process. And now we close that process with the crossing of the Yarden, where they show very clearly that they really learned the lesson and they have complete faith in Hashem. So they finish with that struggle, and then they have to move on now, of course, to this new struggle of getting the balance right between the Shtadlis and their faith in Hashem. Mm-hmm.